Hey, and welcome back to another episode of the Straight Shooter Recruiter. I'm Emily, a recruiter by day and a podcast host by night. If you follow me on Instagram, you already know what I'm about to say. We have the very first guest on the show in this week. Did he give life to me? Yes. Is it still legitimate? Absolutely. If you're not following me on the gram, head over to @emily.the.recruiter to make sure you're in the loop about everything that's happening in the world of the Straight Shooter Recruiter. But I am so excited to kick off this week's episode. We're going to talk all things careers, life advice from the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Durham. I'm so excited to jump in. So get comfortable, grab a coffee. We're going to start in just a sec. All right, I have to give the world's biggest and warmest welcome to my dad, Mike Durham. So on a scale of one to embarrassing, Dad, how awkward is it that you're my very first and only guest?
Well, it's not really awkward. It's, to be honest, I'm honored to be your first guest, but I'm a little bit taken back because the person interviewing me is somebody whose diapers I changed for a very long period of time up until your early teens.
Oh my God, okay, moving on. Okay, well, I don't want us to become the poster child for nepotism. So I want to start off by actually learning more about your career. And I honestly think that your career journey is such a unique one that the listeners are going to be able to take so much away from. So I'd like to hear overall, Dad, what is your job right now and what do you do?
So currently, I am our vice president of sales and marketing at a company called Scott Barrett. And we specialize in making food products for other brands. So anything from baby food to hangover recovery food like toaster strudel. I'm usually the fun guy walking into a room because I'm filled with food products that's in everybody's cupboards at some point.
That's awesome. It's like that Mean Girls quote, but you probably don't know that quote, do you?
No.
My dad invented toaster strudel?
No.
Okay. It's so interesting, obviously, knowing you and obviously you being my dad, that this career that you're in is really not something that you planned for. And it's so interesting to me as well, because a lot of my listeners are people who are in university, recent graduates, and they've been so intentional with what they study. They've really tailored their work experience to what they're looking for. And you kind of had the opposite experience where you gained a bunch of unique experience and kind of landed in this path. So I'd love to kind of know how you got here. What was your career journey to get to this place?
Journey is probably an understatement. I was really destined to be, you know, living in my car or going to prison back in my early days. Our family, when I was younger, like much little younger than you, we had a string of unfortunate events. My mother passed away when I was young. My father was forced to retire in his mid 40s. So money was something other people had. We really didn't have a whole lot of it. Coming out of high school, college really wasn't an option for me. So we ended up having to go to work right out of school or right out of high school. And funny enough, I was working at a lumber yard and, it was like minus 40 and I had a really crappy car that was falling apart, like literally falling apart. And I was on my lunch break one day and I was reading the want ads because back then we got jobs through the papers. Not through this fad called the internet. So reading through, it had a two-line ad saying sales rep needed, company car provided. I thought, well, I need a car. So I applied. So I ended up going to this place and the owner of the company was a small food manufacturer at the time. He interviewed me for about an hour and he took a liking to me immediately because he came from a very troubled childhood and found his way into this company that he started. And hired me on the spot. And that's how I actually got into the food industry. He had no business hiring me. I had zero education, zero experience. I had my one shirt, my one tie, and he hired me anyway. And it was, you know, to this day, I'm grateful to Sam Ajmeri was his name.
Wow, that's such a crazy experience, like the amount that you had to overcome to get there. And I think it's also just a testament to the value of relationships. And when you are down, there are people who are going to be there to support you so long as you build relationships with them. And when you're up, it's so important to take chances on people, whether it's recruitment or whatever your industry is, just being empathetic and giving people those opportunities. I think that's such a crazy experience for you to share. Okay, so you got this job, not necessarily by fluke, but somewhat just right place, right time. what happens next? Like, what happens in your career that takes you to where you are right now? What other roles did you have?
Yeah, honestly, I'm one of those lucky guys all the way through. I found myself in the right situation at the right time. So the first company I was with, the company name was Dodelight, who your listeners may know as Dempster's today, one of the larger Canadian iconic bakery companies. And I had the privilege of working there for 4 years, and I got to learn the sales job at the retail level, dealing with, you know, all the retailers in Ontario. And about 4 years after, I had the opportunity to go at a slightly more senior sales position with the Quaker Oats Company, who is now PepsiCo. Had my greatest learnings and most enjoyable time was during that span. That was my most informative learning period that I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. But and I progressed from being a sales rep there to becoming a sales manager, heading up our food service and in-store bakery, which may not mean anything to your listeners, but in-store bakery is that part of the store where all the fresh baked goods are. My job was to go sell into the retailers into that area, plus the Tim Hortons of the world and McDonald's. So I went from being just a regular sales rep to having a couple people reporting to me across Canada. So it was a big step change. And then from there, I was able to take that learning to General Mills, the makers of Cheerios. Anybody out there?
Love my Cheerios. Me too. Me too. Sponsor me.
And totally loved it. The people there were phenomenal. And I got to work there for about 5 years, got to grow my skills more in various attributes of mainly in the sales side. But it was really Scott Barrett where my life changed. I got to meet Dan Scott, who's the owner, hardworking guy. And I actually left there for the same money I was making before, which is unheard of when you have a young family. But my first interview lasted a long time, and I felt right away this was the place to be. And since then, I came in as a director of sales at the beginning. Quickly, over the first 4 years, was promoted to vice president to a company that went from 50 to 650 people over the last 14 years since I've been here, 16 years. Took on responsibilities managing our research and development, product development, customer service, sales, and marketing. Since then, because we've grown so much, it just got too big for me to manage. So we brought in people much smarter and better than I to take on those other areas. And I just focus on what I'm good at, which is the sales and a little bit of the marketing side.
Well, there's so much I want to ask, because you, in all of those roles, you were kind of talking about what learning looked like and what the, you know, value of learning was for you throughout that entire experience. So when you think about kind of the skills that took you from being an individual contributor to a manager to now a VP, for someone just starting their career or just starting about in sales or in the marketing space, what were some of the skills you think really took your career to the next level?
Well, that's an interesting question. So for me, I didn't have any tactical skills at the time, so they had to be learned on the job. But what I had inherently to me was a feel for culture and values. So I really had an ability to build a relationship, not only with your customers, but with the people you work with. It was really based on principles of transparency, honesty, and integrity, and a little bit of empathy. I know these are words that are thrown around, but you know me as your dad. Like being able to be honest and do what you say you're going to do in a kind and caring way has really served me well because I mean it. It's part of who I am. And I typically surround myself with people of like values. Unfortunately, every company I've worked with, and especially my mentors, have all been driven along that similar value chain.
I'm so happy you just said mentors, because I promise we're going to get there. And I think it's like I planted what you're saying, because we talk so much on this show about the importance of building relationships. And you can have all of the technical skills in the world, but if you can't build relationships with your recruiters or with the teams that you work on, you are not going to get referred for your dream job. You are not going to get that promotion unless you build genuine relationships. So hearing that was really like the capstone of part of your journey, I think is so important. Okay, so I want to actually go back to what you were saying, Dad, from a mentorship side of things, because you called out that mentors were really important in your career. And living in the same home as you for as many years as I have, I didn't even know that you had mentors or people you considered mentors. So either I don't listen or you don't share. So now is your time to tell me, who are some of the mentors in your life, even if you don't name them, but what role did they play? And really, how did you go about even finding a mentor throughout your career?
Lately, my mentor has been Jack Daniels, but that's not quite so true.
That's different, yeah. But you can also sponsor me.
yeah, so you know what, mentorship, it's interesting. So for me personally, coming from zero education and limited technical know-how. If it wasn't for mentors, I would not be doing what I'm doing today. So, and I was blessed. I've been in working for 32 years. I've worked with four companies over those 32 years, and I've only had four bosses during that period. So wow. it shows you that people can stay, but relationships are going to matter. Longevity relates into trust and so on and so forth. In my first job, my first mentor, because I did have four, his name was Rob Shapiro, only a couple years older than me. He was the Ontario sales manager, and it was my first job. I've never written a letter at this point. I've never taken a training course. I didn't know how to interact with people in an adult setting other than to load lumber into the back of someone's car. Mm-hmm. So this man took his time to put me under his wing, taught me how to use a computer, taught me how to write a letter, taught me how to interface with adults in a business setting in a meaningful way. And that first 3 years for me was incredible. And it really springboarded me when I got to Quaker, or the PepsiCo company, because that was a far more refined, very education-driven organization. And you're going back even into the 90s where that really mattered. Academics mattered. Yeah. And here I am coming into their company without that. And my boss there immediately took me under his wing. And he was my biggest step change outside of the last gentleman I'm going to speak to. But his name's Robert Foy, and he's still at Pepsi, heading up there. Yeah, like just a super brilliant man. But he's the guy that taught me the tactical stuff on not just what to do in the field, but how to deal with business planning, how to deal with executives, how to create a strategic plan. He gave me the opportunity to take our division into areas we had never been. And he pushed me to make myself uncomfortable to take our company into areas we had never been, forcing me to be better and forcing our company to take a different path. And in all accounts, he was always by my side, whether I was successful or whether I failed. His arm was always around me, and he pushed me and took his time to teach at every moment and was the most patient and giving of his time. And in fact, if it wasn't for him, I would have never went back to college at night, because he really pushed me to try to better myself, even though I had a young family. You were there at that point, but he was really instrumental. So I'm always grateful, and you'll understand the theme with anybody who has a mentor, you're always grateful.
Yeah.
And then I had to sadly leave the company because I was given an offer from General Mills that I couldn't refuse. And I hope everybody is forced into this at some point. It's nice to have a decision, but it was like a 50% salary increase with a young family. And it was to report to a friend. And I always believed I would never work with a friend, never do business with family, yeah. Never work with
friends. I always hear you say that. So it's interesting that that's part of why you moved.
Yeah. And so I went over, and his name's Mario Michelli. And Mario was an old school kind of guy, but this man taught me how to be comfortable in my own skin, how to stand up, even if I stand alone, to take more risks. Don't be afraid to fail. And he gave me a leeway and a mentorship on how to deal with people in a way I'd never seen before. He was very direct, but honest and fair. But he also took the time to make sure that I was being exposed to the executives of a very large organization, which didn't benefit him at all. But he went out of his way to make sure I got accolades. And during that time, he was teaching me why he was doing that. And that for me was incredible. But the last and most, I would say most important, is Dan Scott, the owner of our company. I joined Scott Barrett back in 2004, and I met Dan, who at the time was 50 years old. It was a company of 50 people struggling. I mean, we were $12 million in revenue and slightly losing money. And after the 4-hour first meeting with him, I knew right away this was going to be my home. And I actually left for the roughly the same money, which is unheard of, as I think I mentioned that earlier. But with Dan, what he did was he opened up his heart and his company to say, make it better. He gave me everything I needed in terms of access to creating new systems and processes and structures, stuff I have never done before. And he put his trust in me to be able to do that without looking over my shoulder. And I remember specifically for Dan alone during that interview, he said, look, if you can help me make this a better place, I promise I'll take care of you and all of our employees. It was really important for him to look after everybody. So with Dan, over that period, I learned how to deal with banks, vendors, equipment manufacturers, a board of directors, taking on other divisions outside of my scope of knowledge, like product development, customer service outside of sales and marketing. So this really was a massive, massive mentorship by Dan for a guy himself who was uneducated, living in his car at 18 years of age, had to scrap for every penny. Every time I had an idea, we needed capital, he would go out and scrounge up the money, but he never said no to me. And even when I cost him money, he'd always put his arm around me and say, thanks for trying. So you talk about a mentor, it's about somebody that cares, has trust and belief, and willing to accept risk. Whether you win or lose, you do it together. And the greatest mentor of all time for me by far.
Wow. And what I think is so special about what you just shared too is that so much of your mentorship came from your managers. And I often get questions in from listeners about how do I find a mentor? How do I engage with a mentor? But oftentimes the mentors are already with you. They're already people who are a part of your life, whether it's at work or at school. It could be professors or bosses. So I love that you found mentorship in places where you already built those relationships. And I mean, I'm sure you were very aware as you were thinking of your answer, but your theme has really just been it was never just about your industry. Everything that you were coached on and mentored on were cross-functional skills. It was how to push yourself, how to have integrity. And I think what's really special about that is as folks start to think about who they want to be their mentor and actively who they want to have guide them in their career, you are not restricted to your industry. You should and can be mentored by people who are in completely different fields, so long as you're learning what's actually important. And if you're taking anything away from this episode, I think it's the relationship building, the soft skills, that being a good person and just loving what you do is really what's going to get you far. And of course, those technical skills are important. But when you think about the value of relationship building and your ability to learn and adapt, that's really what's going to take it home for someone.
Couldn't agree more, Em.
Amazing. I'd be upset if you did. Anyone who is a regular listener is here. First of all, thank you. But you already know what question I'm going to ask next. I always hype this question up as the best question to ask at the end of interviews, when you're speaking with people via networking, career chats, career fairs. This is my go-to. So you already know what's coming. But Dad, if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice when you first started your career, what would it be?
Oh, wow.
No pressure.
Yeah. So probably two pieces of advice I would give myself. So the first is I would have went back to school sooner. Education is important. I didn't have that privilege at the early stages, but I would have done that sooner knowing now what I know then. Secondly, I would have more faith in myself, not be afraid to fail, take on all tasks, even if I don't think I can do it. Because history has proven to me that if you have faith in yourself, more times than not, you will succeed. So if those would be the two things for sure.
I think that's huge. And actually, we did get a bunch of questions on Instagram. Spoiler, I was trying to save the questions you guys sent in for the end and surprise him. But there were a bunch of questions about how do you overcome fear to achieve what you want to achieve. And I think that's such a good piece of advice, is just finding ways to push yourself and believe in yourself. Do you have anything else to kind of add to that? What do you do to overcome that fear?
So for any type of fear, you need to face fear head on. So if you're afraid of public speaking, get out there and public speak. If you're afraid to give presentations to an executive group, give it anyway. Don't be afraid to fail. People genuinely care and want to help. There's very few people that are ill-minded and want to see you fail. People will be there. They'll put their arm around you. They'll help you through. So if you don't think you can do it anyway.
I think that's so true. And I've been there with you so many times. I remember, and I've shared this on the show too, that when I first got my role at Intuit, I was convinced I was so underqualified for it. When I got the offer, I literally asked the recruiter if it was a joke, like if they had made a mistake on my offer. I did not think that I had the experience to get there. And that's exactly, I don't know if you remember, but that's what you said. You said, if it scares you, you have to do it. And I genuinely believe that this career changed my life. I love the company I work at. I love the work that I do. I love my team. And I don't think I would have been pushed if I stayed where I was. I loved my previous company, but I don't think I would have received the same amount of kind of creative freedom that I have in the tech space. So I'm really happy that I actually listened to that one piece of advice and ignored the rest.
How can you grow if you don't break down the barrier, right? It's a cliche, but if you can't get past fear, then you're going to be stagnant your entire life.
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny because when I think about you, that's one of the quotes that really sticks out for me is kind of, if it scares you, you have to do it. But when I also think about you, I just think of you connecting with people. I wish you guys could see my dad at like holiday parties or family dinners pre-COVID, obviously. But he is truly kind of the life of the party, always making people laugh. And you're just really good at building relationships, like whether it's with family or friends or folks you meet at work, even with my friends, you find ways to just instantly connect with people. And I think that's really been the theme of today's conversation, is it's all about those relationships. So what are your tips on building actual, genuine relationships, whether it's at work or at school, anywhere?
Quite frankly, be yourself. Even if you're boring as hell, be yourself. For me, I like to enjoy every minute of every day. So I like to laugh. I want people around me to be laughing. I don't think every day should be a struggle. Having said that, I stick to the values in the relationship building, right? Empathetic. Trusting, transparent, all those great things that sound corporate, but they're part of your everyday life, right? And in order to be funny and have fun with people, you got to have all those things so that when you cross the line once in a while, you're not going to alienate all your friends, just some of them.
And you heard it here first. Just don't cross any lines in front of HR, Dad. Advice from HR. Or don't cross any lines at all, guys. If you're listening, I promise, be good. I love that. And it's interesting, too, because I think so many people are under the impression that you have to present a certain way when you're speaking to recruiters or people at work. And of course, you need to be professional. You need to have that level of respect and integrity. But there's something being like to be said for you being yourself. I am such a goofball. Anyone who's worked with me knows that I'm a goofball. It doesn't mean I don't get my job done. It just means that after my job's done, I like to have a laugh. So bringing your personality to work is really the only way you're going to make those connections in a way that matters. So I love that. Actually, so the next question, and I wanted to ask you this, and then when I checked Instagram, we got so many questions about this, is why do you love what you do? What makes you enjoy the work you do?
Well, that's simple. I'm in food.
He's hungry.
Who doesn't love food, right? Like, it's not like I'm selling pencils or curtain rod hangers. I walk into a room, I got something people can eat. You go into the grocery store, products that we make are in every aisle except the pop and chip aisle. Like, it's kind of cool. I get to see stuff that affect families daily, right? It's wild. It's fantastic. And it's an ever-changing industry. And there's always work. So those that look for work, food's very stable.
We're never going to stop eating. Well, actually, that's a really good segue, because what piece of advice would you give for someone who's interested in entering your industry, whether it's like the business to business side, the food side, the sales or marketing side? Like, generally, what would you say some of your career tips might be?
Well, see, that's so difficult to do, because, and the reason I say that is food, unlike many other businesses, it encompasses a variety from engineering, maintenance, production, quality assurance, sales, marketing, finance, continuous improvement. Like, there's so many platforms that I couldn't just give one set of advice. What I can say is, whatever industry you choose to get into outside of the work itself, whatever field you're studying, you have to be passionate about that industry. So if it's automotive, get into automotive because you love cars, because it's meaningful to you. If it's tax, it's meaningful to you, mm-hmm. right? My case, it's food. I can't see myself doing something like selling coats or anything like that. I love being in the space of food. I love creating, and I love seeing smiles on consumers' faces. It's a wonderful feeling. So that for me is a passion.
I think that's awesome. And so many people ask as well, how do you find your passion? Like, where do you even go about figuring out what you want to do? And I think outside of work, if you just think about what you do on the weekends that brings you joy, if you look at my dad, trust me, you can tell it's food. Like, there's no question. This guy likes to eat. So find...
Just going by my chins?
No. Just one or two. The death stare, I wish you guys could feel it. He was like, girl, you better stop. But honestly, you have to think about what brings you joy on the weekends. And I think that's such a good place to start figuring out what your passion is. I had so many listeners write in asking about, you know, how do I get started in the marketing space or the sales space? Well, the first thing is you figured out what you're passionate about. That really is the first step. And now it's about building relationships with people who are in that industry. It's about, you know, if you do have the privilege to go to school, focusing your education on that and really building those relationships. Have I mentioned build relationships? If you take anything away from this episode, I think that's it.
Yeah, and your audience is probably learning that you're killing our relationship by calling me fat. So you're quickly becoming my least favorite of our kids.
Least favorite child alert. That's fine. I know, I talk to myself.
You need a cat.
I told you I need a cat.
Well, that's what cat people do. They talk to themselves in the computer.
So. Well, that's probably my future. We're back. Hello. So, Dad, now that you're on the other side of the table, so you are the interviewer, not the interviewee, what do you look for in a candidate when you're interviewing them, regardless of their industry?
Well, first off, they have to have the skill set to do the job. Secondly, I have to anticipate that they're going to be better than anything I could aspire to be. And I mean that sincerely. I'm a big fan on surrounding myself with people much better than myself. Outside of that, culture is a huge part of my decision making, and not everybody goes down that road, but because I'm old school, it matters to me that these people are honest, transparent. I need to understand truly what's their future aspirations. Is it generic, or do they actually have an area where they really want to get to? And do their values match that of our company? Not necessarily mine, but that of our company. Our company truly believe in caring for one another, delivering results, having trust and empowering our team to take calculated risks and do great things. And this individual that I'm interviewing, if I get the sense that they can work in a team environment, have the ability to take risks, are comfortable in their own skin, I want that person on my team. I absolutely want that.
I think that's such an awesome call out. And you as a listener are probably thinking, okay, great, but how? How do I show that that's the kind of person I am? And shameless plug, but go back and listen to the interview bootcamp episode, because to demonstrate that you are a values fit for that company. So if it's caring about your customers, if it's really going above and beyond to deliver excellent results, you can showcase that through your previous work experience and how you talk about the ownership you took over your previous work experience. You can have personal projects or assignments or volunteerism that really highlights that. So when you're in an interview with someone who, in an organization who cares about your fit for the company's culture, which in 2020, most companies want you to align to what they believe in as an organization, it's really easy to highlight what you believe in and what you stand for through the work that you do and how you talk about the work that you do. So definitely make sure you're prepared to speak about how you're passionate about your work, what your long-term career goals are, and how you collaborate and work on teams based off of that.
If I can add to that, Emily, I really love it when a candidate comes in and they actually drill me on what my values are. They ask me what's important to me. How do I envision my values, and how does that support the team around me? And the candidates that ask me those types of questions catch my attention immediately.
I am so happy you said that. It's almost like I paid you, because we talk about that so much too. It's if, you know, the interview is a two-way street. You're not just interviewing or being interviewed by the company. You should be interviewing them as well. If you have long-term career goals, if you want to see yourself grow, you need to be in an environment that's actually going to support you. And you need to make sure that your manager is going to be that mentor figure, is going to be someone who pushes you and also gives you the space to be creative and fail and try new things.
Can we go back to the point? What's this? I'm not getting paid?
No, you're not getting paid.
This sucks.
We're not 2 stars. We're going to get a 2-star rating after this.
You're going to get thrown off social media.
I know. I'm going to be taken off Apple Podcasts. It's fine. Hello. It's time. It is my favorite time of every week. It is the period of this episode where I go through all of your most commonly asked questions via my Instagram at emily.b.recruiter. And some of the questions are actually for you, Dad. See, he's so old. He's .orging me. I'm going to ask you some questions that the listeners wanted to know. I'm going to answer a couple of questions. I am so ready. Let's jump into it. Okay. So Dad, one of the first questions is for you. It's how did you deal, or how do you deal with big egos in senior management? I love this question.
Yeah, I personally just pushed them downstairs.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. You heard it here first, everybody, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
Don't do that. Please don't do that.
Yeah, no, I was kidding. Look, egos are everywhere. Everyone's got ones. Just some are bigger than others. I personally deal with egos quite rationally. I look for their intent on the content that they're providing, and I keep it to the business format. I personally don't take anything personally, and I encourage everybody not to take business personally. People have egos for a variety of reasons, and it doesn't make them bad people. It just means they have other driving factors to cause that. So I would highly recommend you just work around it, and just try to find the good, because if you dwell on the bad aspects of somebody with a large ego, it makes it for a very unpleasant work environment.
Yeah, 100%. I feel very seen when you said not to take work personally. Hi, I'm Emily Durham and I take everything personally. I am so sensitive about my work. And I think it's just because I care so much about what I do that anytime I feel like I mess up or that, you know, it's not up to expectations or maybe I should have posted this instead of that, I just beat myself up. So I love that you try to get people, and me especially, to pull myself away from that. I think that's such a good call out. The next question is such a good one as well. It's, have you ever felt nervous in an interview?
Like right now?
Yeah. Okay. Rude.
Yeah. If you're not feeling nervous in any interview, there's something wrong with you. I think it's normal. I've never had an interview where my palms weren't sweaty, my socks weren't wet.
Pants weren't wet. Yeah. A lot.
100%. It's human nature, right? And I think the more you want it, the more nervous you can get. Like as you get older, that dissipates, right? Because now you're searching for work because you choose to, in many cases. And so really it changes, right? The younger folks that are just starting out, it's a lot of pressure to find the first job. So yes, being nervous in an interview, I've felt it every time, and I'm sure you're going to as well.
Yeah. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I'm literally a recruiter and I still get nervous in every interview. And I know what questions they're going to ask me. I have a careers podcast and I still get nervous. I think it's human nature. When you care about something, those butterflies, they're showing up uninvited every time. Someone asked, do you think it's too late for me to change my career path and go back to school at 26?
Oh God, no. Get at it. Go do it. 26. I would die to be 26. Boy, oh boy. No, absolutely. So I was 27 when I went back to school, even though it was at night. I did it to better myself, to do it as a career change. And if you're going to do it full time, that's a very small portion of your life to give back to yourself. So do it, go, especially if you're going to pursue something that's going to be a passion or something that's of true interest, get at it, go do it.
Yeah. Plus one to all of that. I couldn't agree more. We support you. Go do it. Let us know how it goes. So Dad, what is your weakness and how do you work on it?
My weakness.
He panics. He's like, all of them.
My weakness is pure talent. So no. I am the least talented in my group. So when I look around the group that I work with, every one of them have academia behind them. They are all super talented in my field of use beyond anything I could ever do. My weakness would be that I'm not as technically adept as those around me. But my true weakness is that I'm too stupid to know that I'm weaker than everybody else. And I still pull through or plow through to get things done.
I love this next question, Dad. So this is also for you. What would you do if the current company you're working at has no growth and the work is outdated?
Oh, yeah. Look, that happens a lot as companies get flat. So great question. My personal view, doesn't necessarily mean it's right, but it's my personal view, is you need to go to your direct manager, HR, whomever it happens to be in your company, and push that envelope to say, I need to learn X, I want to do Y, because I want to get here. If they can't give you that satisfaction or some form of commitment to get you in a line of growth, do not hesitate, leave. You're wasting your time, you're going to hate your work, and you're never going to find that passion that we've talked about time and time again. You have to have pride in what you do, and you're not going to get it where you are.
Yeah. And you deserve to be pushed in every career, every role you have. You deserve to be excited about the work that you do. I mean, every day isn't going to be perfect, but if you're consistently not feeling like you're, you know, working to your full potential or exploring and being creative as much as you'd like to, you deserve to feel that every day. And when you stop getting that and you don't think there's any potential of you getting that, girl, bye. We won't ask twice. We're done. Next.
Oh, snap.
Okay, Dad, this next question is really good, but I have a feeling I'm about to get personally attacked. What were some of the biggest mistakes that I made, whether I was in or when I was in school or after I graduated? So I guess younger Emily, what did I do wrong? Everything.
The easier question would be, what did you do right?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, for you in particular, you had two faults that come to mind right away.
And oh, that was quick.
Yeah, well, but they were big because they drove you crazy. The first was you were a perfectionist and you expected every piece of work, anything you worked on had to be done and it had to be at the top of the class. And if it wasn't at the top of the class, you would put yourself into a personal tailspin that would drive the entire household nuts.
Yeah, in case you're wondering for details, guys, I would literally sit in my room and just cry. Like, we're talking hours. If it was a 99 and not a 100, we're crying.
And the, yeah, without question, a lot of crying. A
lot of crying.
And then the second thing that was really a problem was you were so sure what your career had to be in grade 12.
Oh my gosh.
And you wouldn't listen. You wouldn't listen. I'm going to tell everybody out there, and there's no slight to the career path she was looking to. She was hell bent. She needed to be an actress. She needed to be in theater,
mm-hmm.
and she needed to be in the arts, and that she was going to be the next Beyonce.
So like not theater, but he's close, guys. We'll let it slide.
Yeah. Beyonce theater. Same thing. Anyway, so after months and months of Emily, you know, you really might want to look at a career path that actually pays, that you have a high likelihood of getting a job. It was nope. I'm getting into this. This is what I need to do. I feel it. It's my passion. Sure enough, 6 months later, she came home and said, I am transferring to HR because I need to pay the bills. So I was glad that the old man and my wife obviously got through to her, but I was more proud that she finally came to her own senses to make her own decision to move into a career that would make her a leading recruiter on this internet thing.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny. But honestly, actually, I don't even know if I've ever fully told that to everyone, that my first major in university was theater. And when I say first, I mean, I lasted a day. And no shade to the arts community. I am still such a big lover of the arts. I just think you need to be such a special kind of person to care about the craft enough that, you know, you are okay with, to some degree, some job insecurity and with having the stress of looking for jobs consistently. And I think when that reality, you know, when that became an actual reality for me and it was no longer conceptual, I realized that it didn't matter how much I loved the arts. I didn't love it enough to put in that work. So I changed. But again, no shade to the art community. You are the most beautiful and brilliant people on the planet. I will always love the arts. You are just honestly some of the most creative and hardworking people, because you have to be okay with that degree of ambiguity. And I should have known my personality. I can't do ambiguity like that. Like, that's just not healthy for me. But yeah, fun fact, I switched from the arts into HR and here we are. And now maybe all of my TikToks make sense.
And I'm not throwing shade either, if that's the cool word to say, but I believe I love the arts too. I just knew it wasn't right for my daughter. So 100%. Hope everybody understands it.
We love the arts. Actually, Dad, that segues really well into my next question, which is, did you expect me to become a recruiter? And now that I am, do you think it's a good personality or career fit for me? You can be honest.
Wow. No, I actually.
Yeah. What did you think I was going to get into?
I honestly thought you'd get into a marketing role at some point.
Okay.
I thought communications or marketing. I thought one of those two streams would have fit you because of your ability to articulate. You had an analytical background. When you first said that you wanted to get into HR, I actually thought that was a major departure of who your personality was, because I had such a finite view of what an HR person is, which is
Toby from The Office.
Yeah, just stoic, black and white. Here's your benefits.
Yeah, so many people think
that.
Yeah,
and you've obviously enlightened me, embarrassingly, that it's far more than that. And it was actually when you started getting into recruiting, it was our VP of HR named Nick Johnson, who I love and respect, he watched you as you started to build who you were on and LinkedIn and stuff. And he's right out of the gate, he said, this is absolutely the right career choice for her. And he gave me a whole bunch of reasons why that I tuned out on. So, yeah, I think you made a great choice. And it just shows you that you can change paths.
100 times over. Yeah. No, thank you. I love what I do. And I never thought I wanted to get into recruiting, even in my degree. Recruitment was actually my least favorite course. I liked compensation the most, hands down. I got the best grades in comp. I loved it. I love the analytical side of things. At times I can be a black and white thinker, but recruitment kind of just opened up all of these possibilities. And I just love connecting with people. And my job is really just making connections. So I love that question. Thank you for asking it. The last question for you, actually a couple of people asked this that I thought was super sweet. So thank you guys for asking. But what makes you the most proud of me as your daughter?
Oh, come on. Seriously?
Yes, they asked. I can show you.
Wow.
A few people.
That's, oh, okay.
Guys, he's deflecting.
Yeah.
He's deflecting.
No, there's some, honestly, this, I got a ton of things. So I'm most proud of what you've accomplished young, like getting into the role with a really great company. The fact that you've aligned yourself with people that actually care. You can see it in the way you're responding with the peers around you. And so I'm thankful for that. I think your biggest accomplishment is on your own, being on your own, doing it all on your own. That shows a ton of character, ton of drive, and it's going to serve you well for your future. So our whole family is very proud of you.
Oh, thanks, Dad. And thank you for asking that question. I will replay this when he later calls me stupid. So I'm kidding. I'm kidding. He won't. We have a lovely relationship. Okay. Congrats, you made it to the end of another episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with my father and I. Dad, thank you for hanging out with me for the last little bit. You were super reluctant to say yes at first. He initially asked what a podcast was, but we made it. We're here. So thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh, I'm happy to. I mean, it was either this or rearrange my sock drawer. So I did this.
Clear winner, ladies and gentlemen. Clear winner. But thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to head over to my Instagram so you never miss a beat. It's at emily.the.recruiter and send me your questions for next week's episode. Dad, thank you so much. Anything you want to say before we let the people go?
First off, thank you for supporting my daughter. I love seeing all the listeners and hopefully you're getting good value. For anybody out there, all I can say to you is never give up on yourself. Keep driving to be great and have fun doing it, because you're going to get old like me quickly. So enjoy every day. I promise you, it makes the path so much more fun. Thanks for having me and be well.
Thanks so much, guys. I'll see you next week.